Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, and if you haven't listened before, the Send Mum Club is a parenting podcast with a difference. And the difference being that this is specifically for parents of children with additional needs. Because let's face it, there are loads of parenting podcasts out there, some brilliant ones that I listen to all the time. And I found myself kind of actively searching for episodes of those podcasts where they had people on talking about children with additional needs. And they were quite hard to find, to be honest. But when they did, I was like devouring every word that the guests were saying. And I thought, wouldn't it be lovely to have a place where every episode was about that? Because it is a unique journey that we're all on together. So maybe that makes it less unique. I don't know. Anyway, this is a podcast that I would have liked to have listened to. So I hope that you're feeling the same way. As always, very up for feedback, very up for guest suggestions, for messages of what you're enjoying, maybe what you're not enjoying, and definitely what you would like to hear more of. Now, today's guest came about because of one of those messages. So Shona Larrigan messaged me, and it was a lovely message, actually. So Shona, thank you. Just to say thank you for starting the podcast, because she was finding it really helpful. She is 8 months into her mum journey of her little boy, Harry, who has a diagnosis of Prader-Willi syndrome, which is a rare genetic condition that Shona will explain exactly what that means once we get into the chat. But she was saying exactly the same things I felt, like feelings of being alone and wanting like connection from other people. And she's saying how much she enjoyed the podcast. So immediately, being me, I've gone, oh my God, I'd love you to come on as a guest. And then I felt a bit bad because I was like, oh God, she's at the beginning of her journey. Maybe I shouldn't have sent that message. And she took some time to think about it and then said that she would love to come on as a guest because she wants to help other people the way that this podcast and people that have spoken previously have helped her. So that's how this came about. And I don't think I was quite prepared for how emotional this chat was going to make me, because it really did. But I guess that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about sharing those moments with each other, you know, whether it's me sharing them with a guest or you sharing them in your ears when you're listening, and finding that connection and hearing people tell stories that may be on the surface different to yours, but actually are really quite similar if you're talking about the emotions and the things that you've gone through and maybe things that you've gone through to get to where you are now. I've really enjoyed having somebody on who is much earlier in their journey than my previous guests. I think there'll probably be something wherever you are on your journey that you will find resonates with you in this chat, and it's a really good one. So let's get into it. Shona, hi.
Hello, how are you?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a bit of a manic weekend, but it's nice to just kind of sit down and take a breather.
It's glorious and sunny here. Is it where you are? Because you're in Ireland, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm in Dublin, and it was gorgeous over the weekend. And sure, we woke up again now and it's raining today again.
Oh no.
But it's not meant to last. It's not meant to last.
Okay, so I'd like to start with just talking about how this podcast episode came about, because this is actually a really nice story. So you had sent me a message. You DM'd me on Instagram. The Instagram, by the way, is at the Send Mum Club. And you'd basically sent me such a lovely message. So thank you. Saying how you'd found the podcast really helpful, you know, listening to other people's experiences and, you know, resonating what they were saying. And I immediately was like, oh my God, I'd love you to come on, which I then felt really bad about, because you're really early on in your motherhood journey, really, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. So 8 months, time is flying by. I don't think people warn you for that.
Well, they don't. I think it's such a cliche to say, oh, time goes so quick when you have kids. But then you have kids and you go like, oh my God, it's going so quickly.
I know, it's been a whirlwind.
I know, it's crazy. But you know, when I immediately jumped on you and was like, please come on as a guest after you messaged me, one of the reasons that I wanted you on, and I know that you were a bit hesitant because you were like, oh, I don't want to say the wrong thing. You know, I'm not nearly as far in as some of the other guests that have been on the podcast. But actually, I think that's really nice, because sometimes I think we forget to talk about stuff while it's happening and be honest about our feelings in that moment, it's almost easier to go, oh, you know, 6 months ago or 2 years ago, I felt like this, but now it feels better. And I think it's actually going to be really helpful if there are other new parents listening or parents that have a new diagnosis, that you're talking about it as you're going through it. And like you said, you are fairly new to this, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing about your podcast was, and it was your episode I listened to first, which is the first one, and when you were just talking about that initial diagnosis and that kind of shock, I was like, that's me, that is me. And it, like, when we first got Harry's diagnosis, which we can talk about in a bit, it was that initial shock and loneliness, which I just craved to find someone who was going through what I was going through, because it felt like I was, you know, me and my husband were on this planet by ourselves without anyone going through what we were going through. So that's why I agreed as well to come on and talk to you, because I'm hoping that there's someone else out there that can listen to my story and say, I feel like that, I'm going through that, and I'm not alone.
Exactly. And I think that your story could be really helpful to other people. So thank you, Shona, because I don't know if I'd have been brave enough to do this 8 months in.
I'll try and not cry multiple times throughout this. And if I do, I apologise for the sobbing.
No. You cry away. And to be honest, I'll probably join in because I'm ridiculous like that. I see a tear and I'm like, oh. Okay, so let's get into it. And would you start by telling me about your little boy, Harry?
So Harry is 8 months old. You know, people say, oh, like my child is, you know, so happy. Or, like, he's genuinely the happiest little boy that I've ever come across. He has the most amazing smile that would like light up a room. And I feel like as well, he can almost like gauge a situation. So anytime I'm down or if I'm upset, I feel like he'll look at me and just give me this big smile to be like, it's okay, everything's gonna be okay. And I'm probably imagining that, but he really is like just such a joy. He's 8 months old now. We got his diagnosis when he was 3 weeks old. So Harry has Prader-Willi syndrome, which is a genetic condition, which I had never heard of. My husband had never heard of. So basically it is an issue with his chromosome 15. So there's a small piece of it missing, which results in a very complex set of condition or symptoms, I should say, which we're still really learning about. And that was kind of one thing I was a little bit hesitant to come on this podcast, because I'm not an expert in his condition. We're still learning. We're still learning something new about it every day. And I'm still very much new to this world of, you know, additional needs. And I'm quite conscious that I might say something that might offend someone or, you know, might not be the correct thing to say. But basically what Prader-Willi syndrome is it causes issues with growth. So people with Prader-Willi may have a smaller stature than typical people. It causes issues with their cognitive development. They have low tone, which causes a myriad of different difficulties. So he's delayed with meeting his milestones. But I think maybe the hallmark symptom, which maybe some people might have heard about Prader-Willi before, is an intense hunger, which sets in later on in childhood and will last the rest of his life usually. And that's something that I suppose we find quite difficult to even understand, because, you know, I've never been starving. I've never felt a chronic insatiable appetite, which is something we really struggle with kind of thinking about the future. He doesn't have that now, and it usually sets in between anywhere between the ages of 4 and 8, and it really depends on the individual. But that's something that we really worry about, because without kind of managing that, it will lead to obesity. It could lead to death if the individual overeats. And it, I suppose, we really need to kind of have a really strict food management and food security within the home to keep Harry safe when he's older, which is something that, you know, will take a lot of learning, because it's just something I'd never even thought possible, that there'd be a condition out there that makes someone feel starving 24/7. I mean, it just seems like possibly one of the most cruel things that I could think of.
Yeah, I agree. I'd firstly just like to respond quickly by saying you can't say anything wrong. Like, I want this to be a safe space where nobody's panicking about what they're saying, you know, in terms of offending other people. Because I've mentioned this before. The thing is, when you have your baby and you get a diagnosis or whatever that point is, unfortunately, we aren't given a handbook of this is what you should say and this is what you shouldn't say. And, you know, I'm still learning now, and Leo's 2.5. And even recently, a couple of months ago, somebody said, it was actually on Instagram, sorry, I saw somebody talking about a certain word, which I'm not going to say on here because it's horrible. And I knew that it was a derogatory term, but I didn't know that it was a derogatory term derived from insulting somebody who has Down syndrome. And that, you know, like I said, I've only just found that out, and I'm sure there's a million other things that I'll learn along the way. So yeah, I don't want you to worry about that.
Thank you. That's completely it. And you know, the world of people with additional needs is something that I had no real experience in. I have before Harry was born, like, there's 15 nieces and nephews on my side. We're a very big family. They're all typical children. There's no one in any of my friend group who've all had babies in around the same time. They all have typical children. It's just something that I knew nothing about. And I was, you know, completely oblivious to this whole world that I'm now thrown into, and trying to learn about and trying to, you know, say the right thing, or as you say, you know, learning things that you didn't even know or derived from a derogatory term. It's just, yeah, it's a learning curve.
It's the biggest learning curve ever, because it's important, isn't it? Like, it's important to get right.
That's it, exactly. And I think probably one thing which I was ignorant about is, you know, the completely, like, wide, vast variety of different conditions that are out there. And I know Harry has a very rare condition, which is why, you know, I'm now kind of, you know, my eyes have been open to this, all these other different conditions. And there's things that, you know, I was probably blind to that people were struggling with. And this was, you know, it's a positive thing that has come from Harry's diagnosis of being able to, I suppose, empathize with people. And it kind of opens up that whole new compassion that you have for other people going through this.
No, absolutely. I feel exactly the same. Completely agree with you. So you've sent me a little bit on Instagram before we've spoken about Prader-Willi syndrome. Now, aside from the hunger, which we'll come on to later, a lot of it actually sounds quite similar to Down syndrome, because it's developmental delays, it's low tone and things like that. Now, is it the same as Down syndrome in the fact that there can be varying different degrees to which it's going to affect him?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's an important thing for everyone with any sort of disorder, is that it is a spectrum, and no two individuals with Prader-Willi are the same. Each of the symptoms can come at different times. They may not get a certain symptom. It can be, you know, mild or severe compared to someone else. So I find that really difficult. Well, it's good in the fact that, you know, Harry is an individual and he will experience things differently. But it's hard now to plan for the future or look to the future, which I was terrible for. I was the type of person before I had Harry where I was nearly, you know, planning my next holiday while on my current holiday, always looking into the future. And now I just can't do that anymore, because I don't know what the future is going to hold for Harry. And all we can do is take it one day at a time, because, you know, what's the point in planning for something that he may not experience, or he may not have very severe and it might only be mild? So that's really good in one sense, but also really, really hard. I don't know if you find that the same.
Yeah, initially I got advice, which was brilliant advice, which was like, just look at him as your baby. Don't think about a diagnosis or anything else, which is basically just saying, stay present and take things day by day as they come. And I was quite similar to you. I think it wasn't just Leo that changed that. It was a combination of Leo and COVID, you know, with the lockdowns. And because I was a big planner, like, oh, like a 5-year plan and what's going to happen in this. And actually, I think I find it a great thing now, not looking into the future. Like, it's allowed me to let go of a lot of things. So my husband is a big planner and he'll be like, right, what's your plan for the podcast? What's next for work? Where do you see this going in a year and a half? And I'm like, I don't know. We'll see. Like, what's the point? Like, I know what I'd like it to be. I know what I'd like to happen. But kind of what's the point in having that plan? Because what will be will be. And I'm a big believer in that. I'm a big believer in the universe and things like that. And you know, what's for you won't pass you by, and leaning into spirituality and things like that. And I've definitely lent more into that since having Leo. And I actually find it really comforting to really believe that the things that are happening now are the things that are meant to be happening at the time they're happening. And I think especially when things feel a bit hectic and out of control, I do find a comfort in that. But yeah, 100% I found it difficult at the beginning to do that. But now I kind of feel like that's almost a gift that Leo's given me.
I feel the same, because, you know, it's really hard to just step back. You know, people always talk about mindfulness and meditation and all these things that we know we should be practicing. But it's almost like I'm being forced into being present in the moment and taking it one day at a time, because mentally, I can't deal with the fear of looking forward anymore. It's too much. So the only way I can get through each day is to just stay in the here and now and enjoy Harry and enjoy our life as much as we possibly can, because looking forward is not serving me anything.
No, I mean, 8 months in with Leo, I felt exactly the same. I will say, I know everyone's different, but it's become a lot easier for me. So it's not something where I'm like, oh my God, yay, the future for Leo. And, you know, I'm delighted about it. But it's definitely something that I'm able to go there now in my head, where in the past, and when he was first born, I was like, I couldn't let my head go there, because it was just far too hard. And like I've mentioned before on the podcast, we're still in therapy, lucky for us, funded by the NHS. And that's something I've worked through in those sessions, is how I'm able to think about the future and not have some kind of mental breakdown.
Well done. The therapy is working.
And now I can. Yeah, definitely. It definitely is. Is that something that's been offered to you, by the way?
So I do go and see a therapist, and that has been like life-changing. I don't know where I would be without her. And I only started to go to see her maybe, I think Harry might have been 2 months old. And that's one thing we were never actually offered. And it's something that I'm only kind of now processing. You know, those few months after Harry's birth were horrific. That's the only way I can really describe it. And we were never, or I was never, and my husband was never actually offered any sort of counselling or therapy. And it was actually only maybe 2 months ago that I said to my husband, isn't that really weird that we were never like, this bomb, this grenade was thrown into our lives and we were never offered anything in terms of talk therapy, which I think is so important. And it's something I'm definitely hoping to go back maybe to the services and say, you know, there's a gap here somewhere that I feel like, and I've recently met moms who have children with additional needs, and I've actually only really had proper conversations with those who've had a diagnosis when their baby was still in utero. So they were offered counselling service then at that time, and that continued after their baby was born. But I don't know if there's just a gap there and currently in Dublin, maybe, where I received this diagnosis after Harry was born. There was no indications prior to his birth. And there seems to maybe be a gap there that, you know, I luckily that I can go and we're paying for this therapy, but not everyone is lucky enough to be able to do that. And I think it's really important that that's highlighted.
Yeah, definitely. In fairness, though, thinking about it, we weren't actually offered it. I don't know whether we would have been, but we asked for it because I was like, help. I mean, that's when we hadn't even been discharged from the midwife then, I think. So we asked for it really early on. And I was like, listen, we need some help here. Like, this is too much. And if it makes you feel any better, you wouldn't have got it yet anyway, or certainly not in England, because I think we got to the top of the list when Leo was like 22 months. That's how long the waiting list is. Well, for here, certainly in Liverpool. I can only comment on where I am, obviously. But it was interesting going then, though, I would say, because we decided to wait, because I was very conscious of the fact that I've had therapy before for obviously different things. And I haven't really felt like I found the person who I could really open up to and kind of got where I was coming from. So I was really conscious of, I don't want to start this process with somebody and then it not be the right person and they don't really get it. Because obviously it's something very specific that you're talking about, isn't it? It's not necessarily something that lots of people might turn up to talk to a therapist about. You know, it's not like problems in a relationship or problems with your mental health. It's a very, very specific thing that you're dealing with there. So we were quite conscious of waiting because we knew we were going to get referred to somebody who specializes in that. And that was something that was really important to me. So we were told the wait list was, I think, a year. And then it was obviously considerably longer than that. But interestingly, when we finally started to see our doctor, I was actually really glad that we'd had to wait because myself and my husband are lucky that we dealt with Leo's diagnosis in quite a similar way. Obviously, there were slight differences, but we were able to really support each other through it. And we were able to have quite deep, emotional, honest conversations with each other, which I'm very grateful for. So it was kind of interesting to have the therapy available when we'd gone through the point where you're like, oh my God, what is happening to us? And the dust had settled a little bit. And then we kind of picked through what was left, which I actually found, like, if we're only going to do this once, I found it more helpful to do it at that point. Like, okay, this is what's left in my head. These are the things that are genuinely bothering me. Now I've kind of found some form of acceptance about the diagnosis. Like, now we've gone through the crazy bit at the beginning.
I think it helped me to go quite soon. And I actually am going by myself because I'm the type of person who likes to pretend everything is okay. And I do that because I don't want to upset other people. And that was something at the start where I was, you know, so broken that I was scared to verbalize those thoughts and feelings to those who loved me because I really did not want to upset them. So that's something that, yeah, I found really helpful for me to go to a safe place to be able to say those things to someone who was removed from the situation. But then also she really encouraged me to, you know, you need to open up, you need to say these things because you can't just keep going on like everything, pretending everything's okay. And that really helped me, myself with Andrew, because, you know, my husband, he was obviously devastated when we got this diagnosis, but people deal with things differently. And he's kind of quite logical in how he thinks. And, you know, it was, okay, we need to plan for the future. And we need to, you know, this is Harry, but, you know, we need to plan while I'm so emotional that I'm like, well, you know, Harry's never going to get, what if he doesn't get married to anyone? And, you know, who's going to look after him when we're gone? And that's where my brain goes. But the therapist really encouraged me to say these things to Andrew because he's the only person who can really understand what I'm going through and who's living that day to day with me. So yeah, I needed to learn how to express myself and to not be scared to express myself.
Well, yeah, like you said, it wouldn't have even mattered really if you had found another mum or another person to talk to whose child had Prader-Willi, because their experience is going to be different to yours anyway, isn't it? And I think your partner really is, in any situation like this, the only other person who understands and who gets it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's hard. I don't know if you find that as well. Like, if you're having a bad day or something has triggered me that day, and he might come in from work and, you know, he's had a great day or had a nice day, everything's fine. I feel like I don't want to drag him back down, you know, to my level. But he doesn't want me sitting there pretending like I'm okay either. So, you know, I need to really just verbalize that today was a crap day, like this happened or I saw this or, you know, whatever it was that upset me, because there's no point pretending everything's okay.
How are you in general?
The way I describe it is maybe the past 2 or 3 months is like a cloud has lifted a bit. Not to say that I'm jumping out and everything's great, but definitely the darkness of the first few months has lifted and I'm able to kind of have happy days. While before I would have kind of described it as I had happy moments in a bad day. Yeah, well, now it's more, I feel like I have good days and I might have, you know, bad moments every now and again within those days. And I found as well, there's certain things that really triggered me in a way. And I suppose I used to use the word trigger before and I was not using it correctly. Now I feel like I'm like, this, these are actual triggers of trauma. And I've had to become selfish in a way and protect myself, which isn't hard because you don't want to isolate yourself either. But yeah, trying to protect myself and not, you know, see certain people. I suppose I'm in a difficult situation as well, where I'm at maybe a certain age where all my friends are currently either have babies or having babies, you know, people who are pregnant after Harry. And I found that really, really, really hard. You know, seeing babies born that, you know, you having people having experiences that you thought you were going to have, that's really hard. And you're happy for that person, but you're also just so upset for yourself and for Harry, which I still find really hard to deal with.
No, I totally understand that. It brings up a lot, doesn't it? And, you know, it also does bring up the why me?
Yeah, that's it. And it's something that what I have to keep, I suppose, bring myself back to is, you know, Harry is Harry and he is still, I wouldn't change him for the world because he is literally the best thing that's ever happened to me. But if I could take Prada Willie away from him, I would within a heartbeat. And I know I might get to a stage later in life where I'd say, you know, no, he's, you know, this, he's perfect the way he is. But I think the thing about his condition as well is around that I know he will suffer, which is something I find really, really hard to kind of deal with.
Is that around the eating?
Yeah, I think it's something that, because I don't know how he's going to feel, you know, if it was something like someone saying he's going to have intense pain in his arm or his leg or, you know, something that I can say, OK, I know what that feels like. And we can, you know, give him pain medication for that. But because it's this kind of intense hunger that takes over that person's life and that intense fear that they will have and anxiety that he will have around food and food not being there, that is something that he will suffer, you know, and I have to come to terms with that and try and make life as easy as possible for him. But yeah, I love him with all of my heart, but I would, if, you know, right now, if you came to me and said, Shona, you know, if we could take Prada Willie away, I would do anything in this world to do that for him.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. Is it something that, I mean, do you know how to manage that, or have you not been able to kind of look that far yet?
Yeah, and, you know, when we actually got his diagnosis as well, the pediatrician and the geneticist who delivered that information to us, you know, they did say, the world is changing and there's new medications all the time. And you've probably heard, you know, everyone's talking about Ozempic. And
well, that was the first thing that came into my head, because it's called a weight loss medication, but actually what it does is keep you feeling full for longer, doesn't it? That's how it helps people lose weight, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's not only Ozempic. There's there's loads of different types of drugs like Ozempic, which are now coming about. And that is something that I remember the pediatrician saying, there will be something. Only last month a drug was approved in the US to treat Prader-Willi and to treat that hunger. So it's the first ever drug that's been approved for Prader-Willi and to, you know, to treat that hyperphagia, that intense hunger. So that's like going to be life changing if it does get approved in the EU and it does get approved by the Irish government to, you know, fund that drug. But it's really given us hope that that is something in the future when it does come in that potentially can help Harry. And, you know, not every drug works on every person, but I'm confident, or I'm hopeful, that there will be more drugs. If that particular one doesn't work, maybe there'll be another one. So that is giving us hope. And it's definitely lifted a bit of that intense sadness about the future.
Yeah, I guess it must be really hard kind of knowing that that's coming and almost trying not to wait for it.
Yeah, that's it. And it's really strange because at the moment, so when Harry was born, and he still has extremely low tone and that's getting better, but he also had no suck. So that was, I suppose, how he was diagnosed originally. Well, he was had extremely low tone when he was born. He didn't feed. He was asleep nearly 99% of the day. He didn't have any energy to feed, or he didn't have the correct muscle tone as well to feed. So he was placed on a feeding tube, so a nasogastric tube, a tube that went into his nose and down to his stomach. And he was fed like that up until 1 month ago. So that was, I suppose, another huge thing that we had to learn as well, that whole tube feeding world, which didn't even know existed. But he doesn't feel hunger at the moment. He doesn't feel any hunger. So that's slowly changing. They say in around this age, he might start, you know, feeling typical normal hunger symptoms. But when he was a baby, he would never have cried for a feed. He, you know, we were setting alarms throughout the night to wake to feed him. So it's like he's going from one extreme to the next as the years go on, where at the moment he'd never cry for a bottle. Now he's taking his bottle now, and he's on solid foods, but he doesn't show hunger symptoms or hunger cues. You know, you're just saying, well, you're due a bottle now. You need to have your bottle. And for that to then flip in later life, it's something that's really hard to kind of get your head around. And I suppose it's a blessing. Imagine trying to manage a baby that is intensely hungry 24/7. Like, that would be really distressing.
Yeah. And how has it been kind of explaining to people? And I guess what I mean by that is people that you don't know. Because if Harry's had the feeding tube, is that something that's there all the time?
So, yeah, when he had his feeding tube, it was there 24/7. So, yeah, we were, I suppose, trained in how to pass that ourselves before he was released from the neonatal. But that was a big fear of mine, actually, Gemma, that, you know, being out and about and people saying, what's that for?
Well, yeah, because immediately then that you know something's different, don't you? So how have you found, like, I don't know if you've taken him to baby groups or anything like that, but how have you found kind of having that conversation? Because the likelihood is that even if people have heard of Prader-Willi syndrome, they probably wouldn't know too much about it. Like, I guess it's different with something like autism or Down syndrome. People know what that is, even if they don't necessarily know what it means. They have kind of an overview of what it is. So you don't really need to go into too much detail with it. But I guess your situation's a bit different.
Yeah. And that was one thing that I really struggled with at the start, was a fear of basically that situation happening to me, where someone would say, here, what's the story with the tube? Or, you know, like, why does he have a feeding tube? And it was actually my therapist who, I was almost nearly afraid to go anywhere with Harry by myself in case someone asked me. And I remember her saying to me one day, saying, Shauna, you don't offer anyone, you know, you don't need to offer an explanation to anyone. Like, that is Harry's, you know, medical history, and it's his private, your private information. You don't need to explain. And that actually really helped me, because I'm someone who, I suppose I'm trying to, you know, make someone feel comfortable all the time, you know, where I'm like, I don't want to be the one saying, well, that's none of your business. I don't want to have that awkward interaction. But I suppose she gave me really good tips as how to avoid those conversations, because I wasn't ready to have them. In years to come, right now, I'm probably more equipped to be able to explain if someone asked me about Harry's condition. But at the start, I think I'd burst into tears and run out of the room if someone had said, why does he have a feeding tube? So she gave me really good tips around, you know, just say he's having some issues with feeding at the moment. He has a tube for it. And she was saying, and it's true, most people get it. If you give them back a certain response, they kind of say, that's, you know, that conversation shut down, without being rude, which is hard. But yeah, the answer to that is that I didn't explain it. And what Harry had as well was hip dysplasia, to add to the chaos of after he was born. So not only did he have a tube in his nose, but he also was in a hip brace for 16 weeks, which I almost found that news that he had hip dysplasia as bad as finding out that he had Prader-Willi. But I think it was just my mind could not take anything else. I remember getting that, and it was 6 weeks after he was born, that he had to have a scan in his hips, and the ultrasound lady saying, oh, his hip is completely dislocated and he'll need to go into, you know, this brace for 16 weeks at least. And it was like I was like, how can I get so unlucky twice? You know, like, how is this happening? Like, why is this happening to him? And that was another thing that I was already so worried about going out with him with the tube. And now also he had a brace, which also makes him look different. And it was really, really hard. And at least with the hip brace, people would say, you know, they might see and they're like, oh, my little one was in a hip brace, or I was in a hip brace when I was younger, or, you know, he has hip dysplasia, and it was something I didn't have to explain. And at least that sometimes kind of took away from the tube as well, because people didn't want to ask about the tube, but they were almost kind of saying, oh, well, I can ask about his hips because maybe that's something they're more used to. So that almost helped things a little bit, that it kind of diverted the conversation away. But even his tube feeding, like I never fed him in public with his tube because I was too scared. And now that he doesn't have his tube, I'm almost ashamed that I was ashamed of it. Looking back, you know, it kept him alive, which is something that, you know, I'm so grateful for. Without that tube, he wouldn't have survived. But it was definitely something I really, really struggled with. And maybe if he had it for longer, I would have gotten more confident. But now that it's gone, there's a part of me that, you know, wish I did just whip it out and, you know, your Costa coffee or out for lunch and just said, screw you, world. This is how my child feeds. But yeah, that was a really difficult journey as well.
But I think it's really important to remember, though, that you have to do what works for you at the time. And it's so easy to look back and go, oh, I wish I'd done that, or I wish I hadn't done that. But sometimes you just have to protect your peace. You have to go, okay, at this point, like at this moment in life, this isn't going to serve me. So I won't do that. And that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the same as having those conversations that you don't want to have, isn't it? If it doesn't work for you in that moment, then fine, you don't have to.
I know. And that was something that, you know, if anyone's listening to this, like when my therapist said it to me, I was like, are you sure you can't just, you know, not answer someone if they ask you a question? But you can. You can just not answer. You know, you can deflect. They might ask you a question. You say, oh, well, it's in the weather, lovely outside. You can deflect that if you're not ready for it.
Yeah. And how do you feel now? Are you able to talk about Harry's condition now, or are you still in that place where you'd really rather not?
It's definitely easier. And it's definitely something I'm open, you know, I'm actually, like, I like when people ask about it, because I think there can be a lot of Irish people are awkward and they don't like asking questions, or, you know, they don't like asking anything out of the norm. And I find that people will ignore the situation, not out of rudeness, just out of they don't want to ask anything wrong or upset anyone. So when people do ask about it and are interested in it and want to learn about it, that is, you know, really nice for me to hear. And I'm much more comfortable now being able to talk about it. And I suppose that's a learning curve as well for myself and my husband. The more we learn about the condition, the more easier it is to explain to people or to discuss with people. And I'll put my hands up, there's some parts of it that I'm saying, I don't know how we're going to deal with this, but we'll figure it out when the time comes. I think the food thing is probably the most difficult around. We'll have to have really tight food security, and you only just realize when you're so aware of food how much food is everywhere and how every event is sort of, you know, relates nearly around food. And that's something that I'm now hyper aware of, and it makes me uncomfortable thinking about how we're going to set up these things in later life for Harry and not making other people feel uncomfortable around it. I feel like that's going to be a really hard journey, and something we're going to have to, I suppose, really think about. Okay, what's the right way to do this? Because there is no right or wrong way, but what's going to be right for us and our family? So yeah, that's a weird one. Christmas came along and everything related to Christmas is related to food. And then you have Valentine's Day and there's boxes of chocolates everywhere. You're into Easter, you have Pancake Tuesday. It just feels like it's one event after the next that is all revolves around food.
Yeah, you're right. I feel like you don't think about that until you have to, do you? So my husband doesn't drink alcohol. He stopped drinking 5 years ago. And do you know what? I should give him a shout out on my podcast. So he does an amazing podcast that's been around for a few years called Over the Influence, which is all about people who are choosing alcohol-free life. So give that a little listen if that's something you're interested in, if you're sober curious or you choose not to drink alcohol. So anyway, but what you've just said about food is exactly the same as alcohol, isn't it? It's like, oh, I've had a bad week, let's have a drink. Oh, I've got something to celebrate, let's have a drink. It's Christmas, let's get the champagne out. Like, it's Saturday, we need to go out and have a drink now. It's one of those things that you don't recognise until it's relevant to you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's funny. Yeah, my husband gave up alcohol 2 years ago. So we used to say that about before Harry came around about alcohol, that alcohol's everywhere. Everyone associates, you know, a celebration with alcohol. So now, yeah, it'll be alcohol and food.
So have you managed to connect with any other parents of children with Prader-Willi?
There's a Prader-Willi Association of Ireland. There's one in the UK as well. And they are amazing. When we got Harry's diagnosis that day, like, we were so shell-shocked. And, you know, looking back, I'm saying we were in this bubble for that 3 weeks that Harry was in the neonatal, where we were just kind of going in there, getting through the day, spending as much time with him as possible and not trying to focus on what is actually wrong with Harry, because my mind just couldn't go there. I remember when they initially mentioned that they thought it was a genetic condition, I remember just being so confused. Any genetic condition I could think of, I was saying, but sure, it would have been spotted in a scan, or, you know, anatomically something would have came up. Like, you must be talking about the wrong child. Like, this isn't something that could possibly happen. Or I thought, was it something he inherited from one of us? Or, you know, but no one else in our family has any sort of genetic condition. And I just wasn't aware of these conditions out there that can just happen. They just happen. It's a, you know, one-off special, you know, we're not carriers of anything, but it can happen. And what I found really hard then afterwards was that, I suppose, period of where they had mentioned a genetic condition. So obviously they leave the room and you're immediately Googling what genetic conditions are associated with low tone. And I remember these, a list of conditions came up. My husband was like, don't Google, like, whatever you do, don't Google. Sure, he went to the bathroom. I was immediately Googling, saying. And these list of conditions came up. And I remember the first condition, it was a condition where basically they said, you know, it's life limiting. The child wouldn't survive past possibly two. And I just stopped there and then. And I was like, I actually can't look any further into this because I can't actually, my mind can't go there right now. But I remember seeing Prader-Willi listed, but I was like, I actually can't read any more about these, like, because I just can't think about that. So the day we did get his diagnosis, it was, you know, it was genuinely the worst day of our lives. The only way I can describe it, and I've heard other people describe it, is an intense grief, you know. It felt like we had lost this child that we had imagined. And there is still moments of that grief that come up, but we left that room where we got the diagnosis, and remember we had got given this horrific handout that was like all these medical kind of terms, and it painted out Prader-Willi to be, you know, it just kept saying our child is going to be obese and, you know, it's going to have all these emotional behavior issues, and, you know, it was just really harsh, the language that was used. And we left that room and it was a beautiful day outside, and we went for a walk around the park, and I was like, I need to Google this now. Like, I can't just look at this piece of paper. And we found the Prader-Willi Association of Ireland, that website. And that was the first time we found you'd feel a glimmer of hope that things aren't as bad as what this printout has, you know, has given us. And, you know, they had photos of, you know, children with Prader-Willi and doing, you know, typical things, and they had really good information, really good resources, and they had a section within that website around, okay, new diagnosis. Are you here with a new diagnosis? Fill out this form. So immediately I was like, okay, I need to talk to someone. And within a few hours, someone had emailed me and linked me in with another new enough mom, a mom who had a child who was three. So it was kind of still in that early stage, but had, you know, gotten through the horrific kind of shock. And that was really, really helpful, just to talk to someone. And she had sent me through on WhatsApp, like, photos of her little boy starting Montessori, you know, doing normal things that typical children do. And that really gave us hope, because what we were given in that diagnosis was very, you know, very little hope in terms of a normal life.
That's such a shame that that's what they gave you and that's the feeling that it left you with. But I know a lot of people don't have a good experience of being given a diagnosis, but really they should have pointed you in the direction of that website.
And I look back on that day of diagnosis sometimes and I'm saying, in fairness, they were very empathetic and they were they delivered it in a nice way, but I suppose they didn't have a huge amount of information about Prader-Willi. So they obviously had, you know, gotten this from some medical website and, you know, were saying, okay, this is what needs to be given to that couple. But if, and I've talked to the Prader-Willi Association of Ireland about this, around, you know, potentially linking in with all the maternity hospitals or the different NICUs around the country and having a Prader-Willi Association of Ireland booklet that you can give to parents. And that is something that they've rolled out. It just so happened that my maternity just hadn't picked that up at that time. But it is something they've reached out to them being like, well, you know, you had this diagnosis, you didn't deliver what we wanted. So I'm hoping the next time in that hospital that if someone gets that diagnosis, it's going to be a little different to them and that they'll have a little bit more hope.
Yeah, it's something that's really important because you're getting news that ultimately, let's be honest, they're saying something that you wish that they weren't saying. So everything else around that needs to be right, doesn't it? Because they're giving you a name of a condition or a syndrome or a diagnosis or however you want to say it, which is going to be really upsetting to you. So then giving you outdated information or information that isn't hopeful and isn't positive is exactly the opposite of what needs to happen at that point. I have to say we were quite lucky. We were very lucky, actually. We were told not to Google, and that the only place to look for information was Down Syndrome Liverpool or Down Syndrome UK, which obviously they're places that are going to show you that life is going to be okay, even though you might not believe it at the time.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, those associations have been amazing. You know, we're in Facebook groups of the UK and Ireland have a Prader-Willi Facebook group, which has been amazing as well. And when you're added to the group, everyone welcomes you and, you know, they send through photos of their little ones. And they also have, I suppose, age-specific groups. So you're not added to a group where, you know, maybe there is parents with teenage children with Prader-Willi going through different kind of issues that you don't have to think about right now. Or, you know, adults with Prader-Willi, you don't have to think about those issues. You know, there's kind of subset age groups where the parents are going through similar things to you. Or, you know, within the next few years, these are things that are going to be important to you. So I find that really helpful, and it's really eased that, I suppose, intense loneliness that we had at the start, where you think I'm the only person in the world going through this. But there isn't. There's people out there who've gotten through it and survived, and their child is doing really, really well. So yeah, that's been positive.
Yeah, I was in a WhatsApp group, and similar to you, I think the one I was in was like children of preschool age, so 5 and under. And I won't go into it too much, the detail of it, but I didn't have a good experience in that WhatsApp group, unfortunately, which I wish wasn't the case, because I wish that it was something that had been really helpful to me. But I can see in general for most people, yeah, that would be a really helpful, good thing. And one thing that I struggled with, and I don't know whether you're the same, is maybe not now, but certainly back then, you know, when Leo was 8 months old, I definitely felt like I struggled looking at people further along. And I think because I wasn't there with the acceptance, actually, sometimes I found that to be really counterproductive, because I'm like, I don't want to see other children with Down syndrome because I don't want to see what our future might look like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, completely. And I find sometimes I will look, say, if it's, you know, a child who is 3 and that child, you know, has just started walking. And then my mind's automatically like, well, Harry's not going to walk now until he's 3. Well, you know, there's nothing, you know, Harry is his own person, and I want to, you know, keep remembering that instead of saying, well, okay, someone else at Prader-Willi did this at this age, so then that's going to happen to Harry at this age. Well, there's nothing to say that that will happen at that age. And like a close family friend of ours actually knew an adult with Prader-Willi, and he had reached out to me to say, you know, my friend, his son is 21 and he'd love to meet you. And like his son with Prader-Willi would love to meet you. And I still haven't been able to do that. Obviously, that family's, you know, really wants to help and wants to give their positive story. But I can't kind of deal with that right now. I've yet to actually meet anyone else with Prader-Willi syndrome. So I think the longer I can kind of maybe do that, the better for now, because it's really helping me see Harry as himself and not trying to fit him into some box that I've seen someone at this age, so he's going to be like this at this age. I don't know if you feel the same as well. It's around, I'm trying to find a balance between advocating fiercely, and there's a part of me that wants to shout it from the rooftops and, you know, make sure everyone's aware of what Prader-Willi is, because that's the only way we're going to get treatments, and that, you know, it's the only way the world is maybe going to be a safer place for Harry, is if people are more aware of his condition. But then there's a part of me that can't go there, you know, it's like I can't do that now, and I'm hoping I will get to a place where I am that, you know, fierce advocate, and I'm out there fundraising and I'm doing, you know, raising awareness, which needs to be done. But at the moment, I'm finding it hard to get that balance.
Yeah, I think everything in its own time. And you know what? You don't have to do that. Even if you never get there, that's fine.
You're like my therapist now. That's what she says to me.
I mean, like we said before, you have to protect your own peace and you have to do what works for you and what works for your family. And I think you can definitely feel that pressure, can't you, to do those things and be that person and put all the positive stuff out there when actually that might not serve you.
And that's funny what you say about the positivity. Sometimes, I don't know, I feel really angry when people are overly positive then. So I'm like, I want everyone to be positive and I want the world to have this positive outlook. But then when people are overly positive, look at him, he's doing great. And like, oh, look, he's, you know, he's, the tube is gone now. And, you know, his hip brace is gone and he's doing great. And he's doing this and he's doing that. Everything's great, great, great. And you just want to scream and say, well, no, fucking not great. You know, he's going to have all these issues. And yeah, it's a really hard balance to try and hit, that you're trying to be positive, but you also need to be realistic. And it's, I'm not easily pleased at the moment.
No, and I think for me, that has eased, but it's different feelings on different days, isn't it? I don't think I've said this on here before because it sounds a bit ungrateful, but I'll say it anyway. So this podcast launched on World Down Syndrome Day, which I was really, really happy about, because actually that wasn't when the podcast was meant to launch. It was meant to launch in January. And then for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. And it became something that was like quite stressing me out. And I was like, listen, this isn't the point of this. Like, just because I had it in my head that it has to launch in January, it doesn't. It can launch when it's ready and when it feels right. And then because it got closer to March, I was like, listen, it just makes sense to launch it on World Down Syndrome Day now, because ultimately that's the reason that I wanted to launch this podcast, because of Leo. So it was World Down Syndrome Day, and again, like you've just said, it's amazing, like the awareness, the fact that that day exists, all of it's great and it's super positive. So the podcast launched on that day, and probably more than any other Down Syndrome Awareness Days, because you've got the day in March, the 21st of March, and then Down Syndrome Awareness Month is October, which ironically is the month that Leah was born, because he was born on the 2nd of October. So there's two things a year that I feel like I should be posting about and talking about and shouting about. So this year on the podcast launch, literally by the end of the day, I was like, Down Syndrome can fuck off. I can't hear about it anymore. Like, I obviously don't want to sound ungrateful about the podcast, because I'm super grateful that people are listening and it's being received in the way that it's intended. But again, important to be honest, isn't it? I literally wanted to throw my phone in a river and never look at it or speak about Down Syndrome ever again. I was like, I'm done. It's just too much.
I know. And there's just days like that where you're just like, screw off, like, what the hell? And like, even this month is Prader-Willi Syndrome Awareness Month. I've actually had to mute a lot of the Prader-Willi pages that I follow, because there's a Prader-Willi Syndrome Awareness Day at the end of the month, and I had been like, maybe I'll post something on my Instagram on that day, and then I wasn't aware that it was actually a whole month then before that day. And every day I go on, you know, social media, it's just like I feel like I'm being bombarded with all these kind of symptoms that I had, some things I hadn't even been aware of, and it was like, I actually have to mute this before I lose my mind. And then you have that guilt that you're saying, well, I should be resharing this and I should be out there advocating, but, you know, years to come, maybe I'll be able to do that. But for now, I'm, you know, I slightly ashamed to admit it. Yeah, I've had to just mute a lot of those pages.
Yeah, but you know, you shouldn't be ashamed of that, because everyone will have those moments. I think, you know, I've spoken to such a wide range of women already on this podcast, and not one of them is like, I'm great with this diagnosis. Every single minute of every single day, I feel amazing. Everyone's like, no, there's, you know, days or weeks or months or moments, whatever it is, where I'm like, too much, need to step away now and need to not think about it and not talk about it, and I'll come back when I'm ready.
There's a part of me that I feel like I've been on this journey for years, because the last few months have felt so long. And then there's a part of me that I get memories now from this time last year, you know, they flash up on your phone or wherever, where I was pregnant and I was like blissfully unaware, and I don't even recognize that person. But I wish I could just go back to me the day we got that diagnosis and say, a few months time, it's not going to be as bad as what it is now, because it does get better. And it's really hard to see that in the moment.
Yeah, I think what you've just said, it's one of the things that gets me, is like seeing pictures of myself pregnant before we knew. I don't know what it is. I can't quite put my finger on the feeling and the emotion, but it always gets me that. And it's hard, isn't it? But I guess it's like before everything changed.
That's it. And sorry, I'm even like emotional now thinking about it. I suppose that blissful happiness that you had. And some people asked me, you know, would you prefer to have known when you were pregnant that Harry was going to have this diagnosis? And there's a part of me that really wish I'd known so that I didn't have to deal with becoming a new mom postpartum and this diagnosis all in one. But then there's a part of me that loved my pregnancy, and I know I'll never have a pregnancy like that again, because if we do go on to have another child, I'll be full of anxiety and fear, and looking back on me, that other me, that old me, she was so happy, and I'd hate to have to, you know, take that away from her.
No, I feel the same. I guess it's a natural thing to ask, though. People have asked me that question a lot, and I wasn't sure whether he was born, whether I wished I'd known or not, but now I'm delighted that we didn't know. And I did have those feelings that you had, like, how was this not picked up on a scan? And we'd had the blood test that picks up the chances of certain things. I actually don't know what the rest of them are. I just know that one of them is Down syndrome and it came back low. And then you don't think about it again, do you? And I had so many extra scans for numerous reasons, like I had excess fluid, and then it turns out it wasn't. It was just the way the baby was lying and pushing fluid one way. Then because I'm older, I was classed as high risk. And I think we were in double figures by the time he was born. And then you think, how in all of those scans, I think I had my last scan when he was like 38 weeks. And you think in our situation with Down syndrome, it's like a visual thing, like an indicator, like that's how it was picked up initially, because of visual things. So it's like, how have you not seen that on a scan? But you know, you're right. We got to have those beautiful months looking forward to meeting our baby. And then I guess you just go from there when things look different to how you thought they would.
I completely feel the same. We had so many scans when you look back. And I had a lot of anger around that, I think, when we got his diagnosis, that, you know, we paid all this money and how could no one have spotted this? But I suppose anatomically he was fine, so there's nothing to pick that up on. But I had a lot of guilt actually around, I remember reading somewhere online, and I remember one of the pediatricians had said to me, is this your first baby? And I said, yes. And she said, oh, well, if it had been maybe your second or a third baby, you probably would have known something was a little off.
Sorry, what? How?
Because he had such low tone, she was saying that his movements wouldn't have been as strong as maybe a typical developing baby. But I was saying, you know, he was moving, as you know, because you're told to track movements and all this. And I was like, but he was always moving. And she was like, well, maybe you would have realized his kicks weren't as strong as maybe a previous baby. And then I was kind of saying, but what would we have done with that information? You know, you wouldn't have said, oh, well, your one's probably lost her mind a little bit, so just leave her off.
Well, can I just say to you, as a mother of three who's had three pregnancies, all of my babies move differently. So like, that's absolutely not true. Like, I've got two neurotypical children who are older, and they both, I mean, with my daughter, I literally couldn't breathe. And every time she moved, I was like, oh. And then my son was completely different, my eldest. So that's just not true. So please don't keep that in your head.
Yeah. And it was just one of those things that constantly kept coming back to me, being like, I should have known, I should have figured something out, you know, like, but realistically, even if I had said, oh, I don't think his kicks are that strong, they would have put me on a trace, done another scan, and been like, everything's fine, please go home.
Yeah, exactly. What a stupid thing to say to someone.
I know. I feel like there's probably certain things that I've taken up wrong as well, but there is certain things I think that stick in your mind around, especially those weeks in the NICU, which were really, really hard. It's one thing that I can't really discuss too much, you know, like straight after his birth and him being inside the NICU and us having to go home without him, I find really hard to talk about. It's even something now when I drive past the maternity hospital. So Harry has so many medical appointments and they're all in Dublin city centre in the hospital. The maternity is right in there, so you have to drive past the maternity anytime he's going in for his appointment, and I still feel sick every time I drive past. Just around that whole NICU situation where, so I don't know if it's the same in the UK, but there's no facilities for, you know, parents to stay with their child overnight with their babies in the maternity once the parent has been discharged. So once the child is receiving that neonatal care, there's nowhere for you to stay, so you have to go home at nighttime. And I just found that so unnatural, having to leave your tiny baby inside a hospital with strangers. Now, these nurses are angels and the doctors are amazing, but in reality, they're strangers and you're leaving your brand new child in there with them. That is just something I find so cruel.
Yeah, there'll be so many people that can relate to that, I'm sure. Now, you've touched on this already, but one of my last questions, because I'm aware I've kept you way longer than I said I would, so sorry about that. What is the best advice that you've been given so far?
And it's actually, I was thinking of this, and it's something that always comes into my head. And it was, I know I talked about the, you know, the diagnosis and that quite harsh information we received, that medical information, but the geneticist, when she gave us the information, said, you know, Harry is the master of his own destiny. And that is something that always pops into my head every few days. And it just really brings it back when things get too much or I look too far or I try and compare Harry to other children of Prader-Willi or even typical children, that, you know, Harry is Harry and he has Prader-Willi, but he isn't Prader-Willi syndrome. And, you know, he will live his life as best as he can and as best as we're, you know, able to help him. But yeah, that was definitely something that comes into my mind every few days.
Oh, that's such a great thing to say to somebody when you're delivering information like that. I love that you got told that. And then my last question is, what do you wish you knew when you got given that diagnosis?
I think I kind of touched on it earlier is, and I think a lot of other parents have said this on your podcast is, you know, things do get better. You will feel happy again. Just in that day, it just felt so heavy and so sad. But that, you know, Harry will pull you through, is what I wish I could say, and that you will be happy and you will have happy moments and happy days. And, you know, I'm only 8 months down the road from that and I'm already having, you know, I feel so much better than I did a few months ago. And I'm hoping that will continue as the months go on. But yeah, just that you will feel happy again, because I genuinely did not think it was possible the days after that diagnosis.
Shona, thank you so much for coming on. I think you've been really brave to come on and do this when you're kind of still in the trenches of it a little bit. Like, it's been emotional. You've made me well up every time you have. I think you've said some things that I know I felt / still feel. And I know that what you've said is really going to help other people. So thank you so much for coming on and telling your story. And I've really enjoyed chatting to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Gemma. And thank you for creating this podcast.
I know I've just said it to her, but I think it's really brave of Shona to come on and tell her story when she's kind of really, really early on in a diagnosis. And I hope that if you're listening and you are a new mum who's just received information that you weren't expecting, or you are pregnant and have a diagnosis, or maybe your child's a little bit older and you've just received one, I really hope that that will be helpful. And it made me feel really emotional. I think, as we've discussed on this podcast before, the diagnosis might be different, but the feelings are the same. And there were certainly things that Shona said then that really touched me, because they were exactly how I was feeling 8 months in and still do now at points as well. So I hope you enjoyed that chat. I know I certainly did. And if you're enjoying the podcast in general, I know I always say, and it's probably getting boring now, but I would really, really love you to like, subscribe, follow, however it is that your podcast app works. And if you would like to leave a 5 stars only, please, rating and a review, that would also be amazing. And I would really appreciate it. So thank you so much for listening, as always. And I will be back with another fabulous guest for you next week.